Accession number 28457, Reel 1.
See, that sort of thing gets picked up. Right, here we go. Nigel Matthews, Reel 1. Can I start by asking you when you were born and where that was, please?
I was born in South Kensington, 27th of January, 1921.
Can you describe your background, the sort of household you grew up in, perhaps, a little about your education?
I suppose one might fairly say middle-class background, father a GP, mother French from Switzerland, but having her roots in Grenoble. I mention that because I'll come back to it. Schooling, standard for the time of the involved, which was prep school and then quit out to go into the Navy, there being only one other naval connection, and that was my uncle, who I never met, and who was lost in the Hampshire with Kitchener in World War I.
And what caused that disaster in the Navy? Or what made it crystallise?
Oh, I can't tell you why I decided to go to the Navy. We used to go to France for holidays. So my only experience of the sea, because we didn't sail or anything, was crossing the Channel, where I was invariably seasick. But that did not deter me. And I eventually had a confrontation, you might say, with my parents at the age of 11, at lunch one day, which is extremely unusual for that time of, in history, because one did not argue with one's parents. At least I didn't. But on this particular occasion, I said that I want to go to the Navy. My father said that was ridiculous. But my mother took my side, and so the wheels turned and pointed me in the right direction.
And what happened after that?
Oh, well, I went through the normal entry procedure, selection procedure, which involved an interview at the Admiralty, and then an exam. And a medical, of course. The interview at the Admiralty is interesting because I suppose there were seven people on the board, and we had it in the old Admiralty's boardroom, which is nothing if not imposing. Before we went in, we had to write an essay, which was given to us blind, as it were. And it was normally thought to be, what did you do on the holes? What do you like? What are your hobbies? That sort of thing. In fact, mine turned out to be, what is fascism? About which I knew absolutely nothing. However, I managed to complete a page about Mussolini and all that sort of thing. And one of the interviewees remarked that I seemed to know quite a lot about it, which was remarkable, as I did not know a thing about it. However, the interview began to die, as interviews do sometimes, after about, 15 to 20 minutes. And somewhat in desperation, the president of the board, who I suspect was an admiral, but I never found out, pointed to a picture behind him, and he was sitting at the head of a really sort of grand table. And he said, do you know what that picture represents, boy? And I said, yes, sir, I do. And he said, what is it? And I said, well, that's Vindictive, alongside the Moritz at Brugge, being stormed by the Royal Marines. He looked absolutely flabbergasted that I should know. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, I was there last week, sir. And that stopped him absolutely dead. I had been in holiday in Belgium with my mother. And we had been to Zeebrugge because the previous term we'd had a lecture about it at school. And that's why I got into the Navy, I'm quite sure.
And how old were you when that interview took place?
Not quite 13.
What happened after that interview?
After the interview, I went back to school. And some weeks later, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks, a telegram arrived from my mother to say that I was admitted, well done. And so after that, one went through the standard procedure, which started on Platform 1 at Paddington Station in September of 1934, when we were all 13 and a half, and a rather apprehensive group of young men, all of the same age, within 4 months of one another, gathered and went to Dartmouth.
What had happened prior to that gathering on the platform? Had you had to go and get uniforms and things like that?
Oh, yes. Yes. I was fortunate that Gives, the outfitters, also outfitted my prep school. So there were one or two people who knew me at Gives, but they were, that was the place we went to and got kitted out. And
can you describe what sort of uniforms that you had to have before you went off to Dartmouth?
Well, the uniform was really the same as it is today. Nothing has changed. One went as a cadet, of course, with just the two lanyards here. But the actual uniform was the same. Reefer with two rows of four buttons, dark navy blue. And until you got to very exalted ranks, you retained that uniform. Being altered, of course, as you got older and different in size.
Did you have just the one uniform, or were there several for different
divisions? Oh, you always had a thing called number ones, which you wore in Sunday divisions, but you had two, and they were for working rig. You had, well, you used to wear white trousers some of the time with a blue blazer, depending on the time of the year. But otherwise, it was all very sort of standard, I think. And, of course, when we arrived at Paddington, we were all looked exactly the same, except for our faces.
And were you met at Paddington, or did you have to make your own way?
I've always asked myself this question. I think, in fact, that one of our cadet captains, there were two cadet captains designated to look after the term, and one of, or both of them, came to shepherd us down in the train and see that we got into no trouble. In fact, I was extremely apprehensive. I was an only child, my brother having died of diphtheria when he was 3, which was quite a prevalent sort of thing. And there were others there who I later came to realise were very much more sophisticated in the context of the Navy than I ever was, because I'd had no contact with the Navy, apart from walking around the dockyard wall or something with my mother when I once insisted we should go to Portsmouth. But, you know, there were 2 or 3 sons of admirals and that sort of thing, and others who'd done a lot of sailing and were much more familiar with the water than I was. And so I was apprehensive, but we all fitted in very well. And as happened in those days, there grew around us as a group, and we were known as the Term, with Admiral's name, and we were the Benbow Term, the last of the Benbows. And there were 32 of us, one of them a New Zealander, who was a strange fellow called Harry Westmacott. And he was different to us, but he too, well, he absorbed the sort of culture that we'd all been brought up to. He, in fact, had a very good war record later on.
Can you describe what happened when you first arrived at Dartmouth?
When we went to Dartmouth, we got to Kingswear, because that's where the Torbay Express goes to. And we all trooped out and got onto the ferry, which I can remember to this day was called the Mew, to cross 5 minutes across the river. Do you know Dartmouth? Across to Dartmouth, where we were formed into two ranks, and a motley crew, out of step, marched quite a long way, when you were 13, up to the college, which stood high up above the river. And it wasn't raining mercifully, but we had quite a lot of gear with us, because there was what was packed in our suitcases went up in a lorry. But most of us were required to wear a British warm or an oilskin. And by the time we got to the college, we were a bit whacked and probably hot and sweaty as well. It was quite a long walk. When we got there, well, we sorted ourselves out, not knowing what was happening, did what we were told, which we did for the next 3.5 years, and gradually were assimilated as the junior term. But the term itself, and if I could go on about this for a bit, was the Benbow term, as I've mentioned. Admiral Benbow was a fearsome character who was killed in a battle in the West Indies. And it was just by chance that we were called the Benbows. We were smaller than all the other terms by about a number between 5 and about 10 to 12 cadets. The Ansons, or the Hoods, who were just below us, came in with about 10 more. The Ansons were a little bit more, and so it went on.
How many of you were there in a term?
Well, in our lot, there were 32. And we were tied up, linked to another term. There were always two terms together. We were the senior of the two terms, the next ones being the Hoods, who were a very big term and came in 4 months after us. But we were all born within 4 months of one another. So we were all very similar in outlook, though not in experience over those early formative years. And we stayed together as a term until we left the training cruiser, which was 4 years or so later. The Benbow term was remarkable. And now people will say, well, everybody's term is remarkable. I think ours was a bit. We had a most extraordinary term lieutenant. A fellow called, you'll not believe this, Henry Bernulf de Clegg Miller. He was a strange chap. I think he'd had some sort of illness in his past, but he was a remarkable leader for small boys at that time. I'd like to think that today probably everybody would have rebelled, but as it was, we were sucked into what was a pretty harsh regime. We were all in one dormitory, and like everybody else, and you started at the college in the first term dormitory. The college consisted of two long buildings which you face with the clock tower in the front one, and you started life at the back block on the left in the first term, and the second term you moved along, and then finally you went round until when you were the most senior term, you were at the left hand side of the major block in the front. So you had to walk a bit further to get there, and you were relegated to outer darkness, and you were regarded as scum by everybody else, but it was all terrific because you were far too busy to worry about that sort of thing.
Can you describe the dormitory?
Oh, the dormitory was a very classical sort of dormitory. It accommodated, I suppose, about 40 people maximum. We were only 31, so we had a bit more space. There were two rows of beds, a corridor in the middle, and then there was a space at one end where there was the term officer's cabin, and there were some steps that led down to the washing and cleaning area, where there was also a plunge, and more about that in a minute. And the other side, it was exactly the same thing for the term that was once senior team. At one end, you had there was the cadet captain had his bed, and the rest of us were all lined by alphabetical order. And so I had a chap called Mike Miskin on the other one side, and I can't remember who was on the other side. But that was where we were, and we got up all together. We had a servant who was invariably a fairly aged ex-sailor, and they were all absolutely wonderful men, and they looked after you marvellously. And you had a chest in which you kept your rig, your kit. And the chests were the bane of our existence when we started. because everything in it had to be the same as everybody else's, and it had to be perfect. All the shirts had to be aligned, all the vests. Down below you had your sports gear and your football boots and things like that, and they had to be tidy too. There were little, and you had one drawer, which was your own personal lock-up. And when you first went to sea as midshipman, it was the same chest. So you were trained after 3 3/4 years to look after yourself and keep your kit in good order. And that worked extremely well, though at the time we were only concerned with the perfection of the attempts that we made. And there were constant efforts made to disrupt what would otherwise have been your normal, even tempered life. Because the discipline was, I wouldn't say that it was harsh. There was the odd beating. I was beaten twice, once quite properly, once utterly unfairly. But that was the way it was, and therefore it didn't matter. And you gritted your teeth and you couldn't blab and say, there it was. And but if you did something wrong, then you were made a slack party. Now, if you were a slack party, that would happen to an individual. If, for example, you were 30 seconds late for a particular muster, you would get a slack party. And that could be either one day, 2 days, a week, or exceptionally, well, we'll come to exceptionally in a minute. If the whole term was thought to be falling below the necessary standard, then it would get a strafe, which meant that all 31 of us would have a slack party lasting 2 or 3 days. And this, if ever there was a harsh way of discipline, which would not be accepted today, was probably the most demanding thing that was ever asked of us. They had an infamous procedure called shifts. And this always occurred after you'd done your homework, and everybody else had sort of gone off to sort themselves out before going to bed. And the term officer or the cadet captain, if it was a slack party, would say, right, go and shift in a sports rig, blue top, blue shorts, 3 minutes, go. And so you rushed upstairs from the gun room where your day quarters were, and you shifted. And when you had done 3 or 4 of those, which were exhausting and demanding, your chest and everything about it was an absolute shambles. But of course, there were rounds in about half an hour, and you had to have your chest absolutely perfect. When it was a strafe, then the whole term was subjected to this. And if the term had got itself into serious trouble, as once it did, there were other forms of punishment, and that's the word for it, which would never have been entertained today for one instant. For example, there was a long passage that ran under the dormitories, in which there were the gun rooms, where 3 or 4 terms, all separate, lived and worked during the day. And along this passage, you could be asked, when you had a shift which involved putting on your oilskin over your British warm, over your number ones, to do bunny hops down the passage and back again. Well, the fact was that we all did it, and we were all absolutely exhausted. We all thought it was absolutely awful. But by God, we didn't get ourselves into trouble again without a certain amount of thought. We started to get a lot of things right, which before we didn't know about it. And so it worked. And I don't think any of us were any the worse for it at all. In fact, I know jolly well we weren't. Nobody fell by the wayside. And the ultimate refinement was that there was the plunge. And to sort of cap everything, they would say, right, have a plunge, get dried, put your chest in order, 20 minutes, go. And you rush upstairs, plunge is always cold water, and when you do it. And you did it. It was quite extraordinary.
So the plunge was a...
It was a small. It was about the same size, I suppose, as these two spaces put together. Perhaps a little bit bigger. And
so we're talking about. Talking about 20 square feet, possibly?
I suppose so, yes, if that.
And was it a big bath there?
It was a big bath. It was full of water. It was cold. In some way, it got a little bit tepid, so it was better. And anyway, we needed the refreshing shower. But in the winter, it was jolly cold. And you started the day by having a plunge. I mean, you got up, and the first thing you did was plunge. And 30 of you poured into this thing, one after the other. It would hold about 20 of us anyway. But we didn't waste any time in it. We just got in and out again. And then you got on with the rest of your ablutions.
So, what other punishments were there? You've mentioned a few.
Well, you could get beaten. If your term officer decided either that you had done something wrong, that you had been slack excessively, and slack was the okay, sort of bad word at the time, or if you had done something actually naughty, you could be beaten. But it was very much at the whim of the term officer. However, for very serious offences, just one back for a minute, when you were beaten, you got so many cuts, cut being one, and it was either 4 or 6 cuts.
What was used for the beating?
Oh, a bamboo cane. And it was damn, it was very painful.
You said you were beaten on 2 occasions.
Yes.
Can you describe for what offences that, offences?
No, I can't, yes. One was because I told a lie, which was totally justified. I used to play the piano reasonably well, and so I took piano lessons, and I forgot to do a practice, and the piano master said, "Did you practice?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And he knew that I hadn't. So I was beaten for telling a lie, and that was perfectly fair. The other time was when I was assessed by my term officer as having been insufficiently enthusiastic when I was captain of the term second 11. It was quite unjustified. I hadn't. But I was beaten just the same, and it didn't do me any harm.
And where did the beatings take place?
Oh, generally they took place in the term officer's cabin, and he just got on with it. But there was a more serious form of punishment, which was known as official cuts. And if the cadet had done something inordinately bad, and I can't think of a particular example of what would have been classified as inordinately bad, a certain formality attended a ritualistic punishment in which the chap was actually required to lie across the top of a box horse in the gym and be beaten publicly in front of his term. But this was very, very rare. And I think in the whole of my 3.5 years in the college, it only happened to about 2 cadets. And I certainly can't remember what they were done for.
Could you describe a typical day?
Well, it started, I suppose, about 7. And so up you got, everybody all together, quick plunge, quick wash, put on your number 5s, which is the ordinary blue rig, or the one with the white trousers on, if it was summer, that sort of thing. And you go down, you would fall in, because you proceeded almost everywhere as a body of people. But you fell in order to be mustered and see that you were all there, which you always were, of course. And then sometimes you were allowed to proceed independently. And as you got more senior, so the amount of independent time became greater and longer. And you went down, which when you were a new boy, you had to walk down to 2 floors into the front block, and round to the dining hall, where all the cadets had breakfast. After breakfast, we would normally have morning prayers in the chapel, and there would be daily divisions, which was the parade in front of the college, and there might be a prayer there.
And what, can you describe daily divisions?
Divisions? Well, each term was fallen in, but there were 11 terms, and they were fallen in under the command of their cadet captains, and on the gravel parade ground, which was in the front of the college. There were steps that led up to a sort of dais, and at the level of the ground floor of the college. And on this dais would stand senior officers of one sort or another. And you were inspected to make certain that you were actually properly dressed. If you weren't properly dressed, you had to wear a lanyard. If the thing was down here, you get a slap party, that sort of thing. And then at the end of the parade, then colours were hoisted, and a Marine or a retired Marine bugler performed colours. And then you marched off to a band, which considers the old pensioners who were looking after you, and played an excellent band. But the killing thing about that was that you had to march round a ramp, and there were two ramps that led round to the dais, and you then marched into the college. But as you got halfway round the dais, there was a most fiendish echo, because the band by the colour staff played, and the echoes of their music re-echoed, so that you got a muddle as you went up, and you always got out of step. And it took us at least three terms before we got it right. But we never actually were punished for it, because I think they realised. One of the things one had to do at divisions was to hoist the colours, and two cadets were told off to be the colour party, and they hoisted the colours in the morning. I had the doubtful distinction with another cadet, who should be lameness, of actually hoisting up the colours upside down. We only got it off the ground about 6 inches. And it was the day that the Daily Mirror actually took a picture of us doing this. And it featured on the big picture in the mirror. But fortunately, they did not catch the colour going on upside down. We got into big trouble for that, but we avoided official cuts.
After day divisions, what happened to you next?
After that, then we went back to school. We had classes all day long, and they were the standard classes that you get in any school. We didn't have Latin, which was one of the reasons I think I joined the Navy. They had seamanship, which was unique, and we had things like sailing, sports every afternoon. The pattern of the schooling was perfectly typical. You had two lessons or three in the mornings. As a term, again. Though as you went on, you were divided up. There was more of a mix between the senior terms. You went to lunch in the dining hall again, halfway through the day, and then in the afternoon, you either went back to lessons, or you did something like sailing, or playing rugby, or whatever it was, gym, and there was shooting as well, rifle shooting. And then you had two more lessons in the afternoon, and then tea, and then prep. Weekends, there was time off, to a certain extent, but every afternoon, you had to do a thing called a log, and this was a requirement for you to do something from a list that was given, which was regarded as essential for your proper upbringing and training and fitness, and it might consist of a run, which was, there were two sorts of runs. One was out of the college and round what was known as the Norton Triangle, where there was some playing field, and the other one was a longer one that went out of Black Cottage. And depending on how long the run was, or the task was, sailing was included, shooting was included, and so on and so forth, you could perform either one log or half a log. If you'd performed half a log, you had to do another one. You had to do a log a day, and you had to record it in the book.
How long was a log?
How long?
That period of time.
Oh, well, it took about, I suppose, a log, about an hour or two, no less. If you were shooting, it might take 20 minutes, half an hour, that sort of thing. But generally, one wound up, certainly in the summer, after cricket on the grounds, which were extensive and wonderful, you in the canteen, where one sort of bought plates of beans and that sort of thing from the limited pocket money of a shilling a week which you got. And of course there was sailing. And sailing took place down the river and at a place called Sand Key, where there was also an engineering workshop, and part of the instruction was spent in engineering.
Nigel